Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Sarah Pascoe.
Hello, I'm Carriad Lloyd.
And we're weird about books.
We love to read.
We read too much.
We talk too much.
About the too much that we've read.
Which is why we've created
The Weirdos Book Club.
Join us!
A space for the lonely outsider to feel accepted and appreciated.
A place for the person who'd love to be in a real book club but doesn't like wine or nibbles.
Or being around other people.
Is that you? Join us.
Check out our Instagram at Sarah and Carriad's Weirdos Book Club for the upcoming books we're going to be discussing.
You can read along
and share your opinions.
Or just skulk around in your raincoat like the weirdo you are.
Thank you for reading with us. We like reading with you.
This week's book guest is Julia by Sandra Newman.
What's it about? It's a retelling of George Orwell's 1984 from the perspective of, guess who? Julia.
What qualifies it for the Weirdos Book Club? Well, it's a retelling of George Orwell's 1984 from the perspective of, you guessed it, Julia.
In this episode, we discuss
artificial insemination,
moustaches,
institutions,
rats,
fear,
third trimester transport,
and Big Brother's real name. Joining us this week is actor and writer Daniel Rigby. Daniel is a BAFTA winner. He's been in so many plays, so much television. He's an incredible, incredible, talented human. And he has also written an amazing audiobook called Isaac Steele and the Forever Man, which is available on Audible only.
Trigger warning, in this episode, we do discuss violence. Welcome, Daniel Rigby.
Welcome, Daniel Rigby.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You said that really quickly, like I'd wanted to say that bit.
No, I wanted us to both say it.
Okay. Welcome Daniel Rigby.
Thank you so much.
Welcome
creepy guys.
Welcome your amazing moustache.
Yeah, thank you. It's for a job.
It's for a job.
It's coming off on Saturday.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, yeah, as soon as
you're
I
not,
finish.
You're not keen?
I'm not keen. I don't think anyone else is. Are you?
Are you a method actor? When you look in the mirror, are you your character?
Do I see someone else?
Yeah.
I don't know whether it's related to work. No, definitely not method. It's just a moustache.
Yeah, okay, we spoke to your very good friend, Mr. Wozniak, Wozniak, who sat there with his moustache.
But he's in character.
His personality choice, isn't it? Although I have seen, have you seen him without it? I've seen him without it.
Yeah,
for a job, he had to take it off, and I just kept looking. And he had to go at me eventually. He said, "You have to stop. You have to stop making a fuss about it."
I had a similar reaction because my dad had a mustache for absolutely years, and then in about 1992, he shaved it off. And it's one of those big memories from childhood of how much I cried. And it was a similar reaction when Mike did.
It was triggering. Wozniak was triggering. Yeah, it was. Oh. He looked really weird without it, didn't he?
He's a deeply handsome man.
Yeah,
yeah.
But it just didn't look right.
It looked not like that luxurious brush.
It looked like something was missing. That's what I kept thinking.
Yeah.
Like you've got to put your trousers on. It was like that level of like something's not right. Yeah.
His face trousers. Yeah. He forgot to put his face trousers on.
Anyway, he stuck with it.
I'm trying to think how to segue from moustaches into George Orwell.
He had a moustache. He had a terrible moustache.
Well, that's what I was hoping.
Stalin.
I couldn't remember.
Stalin.
There we go.
Lovely stuff.
Lovely stuff. Yeah.
Stalin.
And that gets us on to this week's book.
Julia.
Bad moustache.
By Sandra. Julia by Sandra Newman, which is, of course, which is based on the character of Julia from 1984.
So, Daniel Rigby, have you read 1984?
I did ages ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, school ages ago or?
I think I was probably late teens, early 20s.
Okay. That's the age, isn't it, when most people read it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm.
And you're but, like, yeah.
When did you guys read it?
I think late teens.
Yeah.
Yeah, like maybe just left school and was like, oh yeah, George Orwell. Mm. Yeah.
I read it at school. Yes, we compared it to Handmaid's Tale.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's a very that for progressive GCSE. School. Yeah.
Oh. Progressive school?
Yeah, that's like two modern texts.
I think it was a teacher probably didn't give a shit about scaring us, traumatising us. So we compared, and then I did read it again. I read it again in the 2000s, and then I decided I was going to read it every decade of my life. So I have listened to it. On audiobook. Mm. It's the first audiobook I've ever listened to, actually. I had terrible nightmares with the combination of 1984 and Julia.
Yeah. This book is, I found it really stressful to read.
I was trying to think about when I'd read the original because, I mean, I don't know, I didn't notice, and because a feminist retelling of 1984, I thought, oh, right. I think it had just been a complete blind spot when I'd read it first time.
Obviously,
I mean, also a shit bloke, but...
all great 20th century works, you're like, oh, there's no women in them, hang on a minute.
But I do remember when I first, one of the first impressions was finding the Julia passages strange and a bit cliched and tonally a bit weird.
Yeah, yeah.
And feeling like it was a bit thinner than the rest of the book somehow, which is maybe testament to him not drawing the character as well. But as reading this, it was just very stressful. But also, I couldn't. I was a bit in awe of the achievement.
Yeah, because, I think it's awesome.
Yeah, yeah, and it's to occupy another person's creation so convincingly. I just thought was absolutely amazing.
That's why I had to keep going to the audiobook because I kept going. I don't think she's made that up. I think she's fleshing out. She's added another dimension onto something that was already this incredible classic.
Mm. Yeah.
And she's given you more. And never, ever, ever to the detriment of 1984, but making it better.
Yeah.
Making it more realistic, making it modern.
Yeah. That did blow my mind.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I disagree.
Oh.
I know, she disagreed.
I was like, well, look, it's a brilliant book. And I agree with you that there's like this whole other world. But then I feel like the last third, it started to fall apart.
The last third's weird. Well, yeah. And I don't know I would love to know what the author was trying to do.
And that for me, kind of, you know when the ending to a book slightly ruins everything you've, and up until then, I felt very like, wow, this is like, this world is so real. And then because the last third was a bit thinner, I started thinking more about this. And I was like, is this elevated fan fiction? Like, where's the line between fan fiction and this? Because it's like, it's definitely well
maybe
written.
Maybe it's a spectrum.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, maybe there doesn't have to be a line. It's not a problem for me. Even if it was fan fiction, it wouldn't be a problem. So I've got a question. Mm. Do you think this book could be enjoyed by itself by someone who hadn't read 1984 or seen the film?
Yeah, what do you think?
My inclination is to say maybe it would be less enjoyable. I mean, I think it would still enjoy it because I think it's still rendered really effectively that world and the oppression. So I think I think it would be less enjoyable.
Yeah,
and that's the thing. I don't mean it derogatory as fan fiction, but it is that thing of like, I think you kind of need to know 1984 to enjoy it on a certain level. I think if you didn't, you are, because again, like, she is feeding off an original work. Mm. And so when she does stuff, you're like, oh, that's cool, because in the original, that doesn't happen.
It's like when teachers know what Shakespeare is referencing when you go to see a play. And they're like, very good.
Yeah.
And they're the only people laughing.
Yeah. Exactly, yes.
There's a lot of that in theatre. They may as well just be shouting, I understand!
Yes.
Rather than laughing.
Yeah. I also know that reference.
But there's a great amount of pleasure in that, isn't there? And feeling clever. And that's what, there are points in this book where Sandra Newman offers that to the reader.
The book came out recently called Wifedom by Anna Funder, where she kind of, which is very controversial, but she highlighted how much George Orwell didn't really credit his wife, Eileen O'Shaughnessy, and how much she helped write it. And she actually wrote a poem when she was at school called 1984, blah, 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 blah. There's lots of, it's more nuanced than that. And I think we're having a bit of a moment with Orwell where we are like, okay, like what's behind it? What's the context? Like, we can now rewrite your stories. But I do think, we're back to our old argument, like, what is art and art? Because I still think his works of art are so incredible. Mm. And he's such an incredible writer that I would want someone to find 1984 through this. Because I do think,
and this isn't,
as good as
this is. This isn't a criticism. This isn't a critique of him.
No, not at all.
And that's why I thought, whether Sandra Newman was commissioned to write it or not,
what I could tell was how much fun they were having. Mm. Like how fun it is to take a world that's been created that's that incredibly drawn and then think, well, where didn't they have time to go? Where else is there? Or that wasn't interesting. In a story, you don't tell everyone's story.
Yeah.
You pick a narrative.
I love the fun of seeing Winston from her point of view.
Yes.
Because I can't, well, not that I'd when I finished this, I wish I'd reread 1984 in preparation for this, but then I couldn't. I just have this picture in my head of the noble rebel protagonist from the original book.
Yeah, so cool.
And then reading this and him being a slightly head up arse kind of ineffectual figure.
And
in
also how old she describes him, and he's only 39. I thought he was like 60.
Oh, but she's so much younger, isn't
she? She's 26.
Yeah, I think that's a really good bit that I loved about how she skewers Winston, that he is kind of like the bit where they try and have sex and she basically is like, oh, I've got to play him like this, have I? Because like he needs it to look like this. I was like, I'm not going to get my pounding today, which is what I'm after. I was like, I kind of loved that.
I know. There were some lines that I enjoyed so much. So I actually enjoyed the idea of George Orwell, for instance, writing a line like, but far too soon, he groaned and tensed. She wanted to cry out, not yet, but his body trembled and went weak. A moment later, he rolled off her and there was that cheated feeling of a prick sliding out. I was just like, Sandra Newman has knowledge. George Orwell didn't have.
No.
And wasn't trying to. George Orwell hasn't failed to write the body properly.
Yeah.
No.
That's not what he was trying to do. And Sandra Newman is. And and Sandra Newman is just such an amazing writer.
Also, to write something in a world that, I mean, because the world that Orwell created has entered the lexicon
in
so many ways. It's culturally, it's such a milestone.
Yeah, it couldn't be bigger, could it?
It could be bigger. No. So like to do that and to do it so well, I think it's kind of amazing in that way.
I'd say the first two thirds, I was like, this is incredible.
Yeah.
How nice to experience this world like a add-on to a video game. It was like, oh my God, we can follow Julia's character instead of Winston's character. Like,
well, it's
that's amazing.
Prequel.
Yes, that's true.
That we meet Julia before Winston has a relationship with Julia, which we know happens, and we know from 1984 perspective, we get to see Julia at work.
Yes, like,
we get menstrual clots on a bathroom floor.
Yeah.
Which we don't get in the original.
The female part of this story.
And because Winston, as George Orwell wrote him, is sort of very uptight, with Julia we suddenly have this really emotional drama queen experiencing the same world. And that's what I loved. It's like Sandra Newman obeyed all of the rules set up by George Orwell, but I was in the mind of a human being responding to them completely differently. The beginning of 1984 is so much like logistics of this is what the Newspeak Dictionary is, and this is what we do every year, and this is how we change it, and here's a furnace we put things that used to be written in, and we're inside Julia's life where she doesn't care about those things, and the author doesn't have to tell us all of them because there's a pre-book that people can go back to.
I agree with you, but I guess all I'm saying is like, Orwell is really interested in how you break a man and how an institution does that. Newman is interested in how we feel about those institutions. And then when she has to write and describe those institutions, I feel like she struggled in the way that Orwell is a product of those institutions, of horrible boarding schools, of the BBC. And I feel like Newman could not live up to his
hatred. Newman is much less interested in institutions.
Yes.
But what she's interested in is survival.
Yes. But it's based on 1984, which is about institutions. So that's when the last third, I was like, you kind of need to give me more than like, oh, room 101, it's busy, and the 50 minutes. Mm. I was like, I don't feel like how I felt with 1984 when I felt sickened at humanity. Mm. I feel like it's quite hard to run an institution. It's quite difficult.
Yeah.
And when she leaves love as well, you know, when Winston leaves the Ministry of Love, like I said, you feel like he's gone. He's not there. Whereas I felt like she survived it and she's not walking on all fours. She kind of looks okay. But people don't like her, but if she shows them the scars, then they're more,
The breaking of Winston is proving to him that there was no part of his mind that is his from the party, and he will do the worst thing, which is the person he thinks he loves.
Yeah.
Whereas Julia has already done all of those things. So she can't be broken because she's already sent people to their deaths. She's already ensnared people for her survival. I think it would have been a lazier or less effective shot to have her in room 101 going, oh, do it to Winston. Oh, no, now I'm broken.
Oh, no, I would never
She's
say
already
that.
Done it to Winston.
But you didn't get a sense that she was broken by this... The worst thing possible.
I think she
love.
Was broken much earlier in her life. And okay. so all of these things that she's been doing were as a broken person.
Mm.
All of it, ever since she was a teenager, has been survival and using, and that's what I found so interesting, sex as survival, transactional sex. And that's the thing that I loved about this book is, you know, this is 1984, but with masturbation and men who can't get it up the first time and...
Oh, and abortions and periods and...
Yeah, sex in the grass with your legs open, like all of these things, like the visceralness of that, that's what then made... So the reality of the, I guess, what would you say, like the corporate, the body was actually there. So I didn't miss the institution. I was being told a story that was much more physical. You couldn't have both things.
But I know, I totally know what you're saying, but then it's interesting to choose a book like 1984, which is... About institutions.
I know, but that's the point. I think that's the thing. If you're doing if you're adding a dimension to something that already exists, you don't need to do that exact book because that's already there.
Yeah.
I did wonder reading it, and it might be a shit man thing to say, but whether there's the fact that, like you're talking about, the body being so in it, and the fact that the book is such an exercise in correction, it feels like it's a corrective. It's putting things right that were missing or were blind spots of Orwell's in the original. But whether there's something that the assumption in the original is that women have less sexual desire, so that's why they work in making pornography and things that are just taken for granted, and that this goes so far the other way in filling it with female desire. The book is full of that as a theme, which is a specific sort of task that the book has, it feels. Whether it makes it narrower as a satire.
Yes, I think that's what I'm trying to say. That's well done. That's exactly what I'm trying to say.
I loved the pornography in this. I loved her describing to Winston the porn.
Oh yeah,
my telescreen's
broken.
And then another character, when O'Brien says my telescreen is broken, you need to come over. And she's like, this is the plot of the porno.
Yeah, that was really funny.
Really funny.
There were some funny bits in it. But no, I completely agree with you. It's, and I think we're all saying the same thing. You're saying like it filled this huge gap, and that's brilliant. And 1984 exists, so that's great.
Yeah,
but then it slightly narrows it because it's focusing on feminine desire and women in this world.
And actually, I didn't read it as a corrective. I mean, look, I'm very happy for authors to have blind spots. No one is perfect. Everyone is a product of their environment, their time, their own biases, their own bigotry, you know.
Mm.
You're looking at the story in a different way, and I feel like that's what Sandra Noon was doing.
To expand that world, to take on Orwell, you know, who is considered one of the like greatest writers of the 20th century, and to keep up with him, and then to... slightly cop out at the end is how I felt, of like not giving her what we get with Winston. And that's one of the things about 1984, it ends and you're like, fuck, how could he end it like that? And then you're like, wow, that's an amazing writer. And I feel like they didn't go that bleak. They saved her. And I get what you're saying about Julia's different character to Winston, but I like the end just became so far-fetched.
Yes.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The really shocking thing is that scene, and in both books, where he notices she's attractive and wants to rape and murder her.
Yeah, yeah.
And I thought Sandra Newman was making that up. like,
oh no, I remember that from 1984 so clearly.
And that was that was when I went, okay, I need to go back and find out what George Orwell was saying that Sandra Newman is reflecting on. I was like, oh, same thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Definitely didn't flag that.
No.
When I first read it. Or never before. Just like, yeah, that's what men think when they
but
look
the
at
book,
nice young
the
women.
The book didn't flag it. The book doesn't say this is wrong.
No.
This is wrong think. So. but and also it's nothing to do with, because the original, obviously it's a political critique, and the reason that he wants to kill her isn't anything to do with politics, because he can't have sex with her.
Yeah, well, because sex is bad, and so wanting sex is very frustrating, so just kill the thing that makes you think about it.
Yeah, but I agree with the last part of the book. I stopped finding it believable as I stopped following it.
It was such a shame because the first two thirds I was like totally like, fuck, I was so worried about
it. And it could have ended at the Chestnut Cafe.
Yeah.
So the Chestnut Cafe is the ending of the original 1984. And while we now have Julia there, not Winston.
I have a problem with Chestnut Cafe as well.
All right then.
Shall I get into it?
Yeah.
Okay, people will know, I think this isn't a spoiler, they know the famous Room 101 scene where Winston gets a rat cage on his head and he says, do it to Julia.
And it's his biggest ever fear.
Yeah.
The whole way through the book, we have got to know Winston. We know it's his most terrifying thing.
Yeah.
That's how it works with Room 101.
And it's very real. Yeah. Like in 1984, you're very like, it's not like, oh, I'm a bit scared of rats.
Oh no, it's
like,
absolutely terrifying.
It's terrifying, and when... you know, the rats come in, you're like, oh no! Like, and that's for me when she goes into the Ministry of Love, that for me is where it slightly fell apart, because I feel like, this is interesting, isn't it? Like, Orwell, like you said, doesn't quite capture Julia, but he captures institutions that are mental and bureaucratic, and obviously he worked for the BBC during the war, and that was part of his job, was to...
put rat cages on
it was a game show.
They didn't talk about it.
McGuinness took it over, didn't they?
And they cancelled it after one season, which was a real shame, because Paddy was really getting to his stride.
Yeah.
So I think all
rat office, rat office,
do it to Julia. Oh my god, that would be amazing. Nine women lined up, you have to choose which one will get the rat on their face. And they have to ask questions to find out which one's most suitable. No? Okay. So I feel like Orwell gets the institutions really well. And then I felt that's when Newman, slightly fell.
Okay.
Let me finish.
It's really hard.
I know. I've been listening. At the
so
hurdle,
hard to listen, Daniel.
I know.
Because Ministry of Love, I felt like when she got in there, I didn't feel like we got a sense of what her fear actually was. Someone says it's her vanity, which even in herself, she's like, is it my vanity? Mm. And like, I felt like she missed a trick, because how Julia deals with the rat sequence is incredible and badass. And I was like, wow. But I didn't feel, it wasn't her fear. And it made Room 101 not feel that scary. Yeah. And she's dealt with the admin. Like, I felt like she made it less scary and made it less torturous, which in 1984, you're so afraid for Winston.
I thought it was all done intentionally.
Not badly.
Okay. She was deconstructing it, because the thing that kept bothering me in this version of it was the admin behind the authoritarianness. So George Orwell, we just take it as read. This is it, especially off the back of Russia, Stalin, Nazi Germany.
It does make it more scary.
Of course. And they were organised.
They were, you know what? They were organised.
Credit where it's due.
Not complimenting them. But what I loved about this was that from the beginning, I kept thinking, there's more people working for Big Brother than who aren't working for Big Brother. The admin of it, I was like, no one's this organised. Even evil people aren't this organised.
But that's why then it starts being so real.
I know. But then the idea that I loved was that in Room 101, it's booked up, so everyone's got 15-minute slots.
I loved that bit.
The logistics.
Yeah,
so it felt less scary for me. It was supposed to be less scary, because it's supposed to show you human beings are still doing this. Even though it's your fear.
I found it more scary, because it's sort of that, the banality of evil.
Yeah.
When whoever it is comes in and says, Albert needs the room in 15 minutes, or whatever it is, you're like, wow,
that is... And the idea of just out-talking them, that you don't have to be a sort of kung fu genius.
But I know what you mean. you can just...
All you have to do is eat out 15 minutes.
When he said do it to Julia, I felt like a more horrific regime, this is my imagination, would not put the rats in, would get an actress to play her mum and come in and say, you killed me. And I was like, I felt like there was depths of Julia that we didn't get to experience, which you do with Winston, and you see him broken. I felt like we didn't get her broken. Yeah. I wanted her broken.
The third dimension.
When you say third dimension, you mean the end third?
No.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
I mean, three-dimensional.
Oh, right. I thought you were talking about the end third and calling it the third dimension. I was like, that's confusing.
No, three-dimensional, as in, so it's 2D, but Sandra Newman adds another third dimension. That's what I was saying. The kicking of the hand. She goes to the Mrs. Melton, is it?
Yeah,
Mrs. Melton,
all like,
the black market lady, and she says, you know, and they're all these women in there, they're crying and they're saying, you know, there was a bomb and a woman's 3-year-old was killed.
Oh, yeah.
And then this man from the party was walking around and the hand was there of the 3-year-old and he just kicked it.
Yeah.
Saying, like, what kind of person could do that? And then Julia is told by another character later on that it was Winston that did it and she doesn't believe it. And then she asks him and she was like, why did you do it? And he's like, I don't know. It's in the way. And so it sort of shows how if you're around violence all the time,
you just completely desensitize human, to it.
Desensitize. Humans' lives have no value. But the first thing Sandra Newman makes us do is empathize.
Mm-hmm.
So the kicking of the hand is one sentence in the original 1984. When Winston's walking on the road and he kicks the hand, there's this little hand. And Sandra Newman builds a whole backstory of who that hand belongs to, how the proles react to someone from... Mm.
The party,
walking along the street and kicking a living person's, you know, a person who was a moment ago living, just kicking their hand out of the way, like they're rubbish. And Julia hears that story about, a faceless person and then discovers it's not only the person that she knows, it's the person that she has these feelings for, whether we call it lust just sexual interest or whether she's, you know, cares about him. But he did do that thing. Sandra Newman fleshes that whole thing out.
Fleshes.
exactly. So makes it so much worse than one sentence in a book, which is just like, 1984, George Orwell doesn't want the reader to really think about who that hand belongs to.
Oh, no, it's all about Winston.
Tragedy.
Yeah, I think
but also the tragedy is happening in a really sort of faceless way, whereas Julia made it realer. For me, I thought Julia became mad, and that's
that's true. I
didn't
believe,
I didn't know if she was pregnant or not.
I wondered about that as well after the Ministry of Love.
Because
it's
so
how
much time. And she's had a pregnancy that's lasted months. Like, as in,
and she's having electric shocks as well. And they're saying
it's kicked in the stomach. And sorry, this is really horrible for anyone listening. There were some really gruesome things that happened in this book, just like in the original.
Well, while we're on the pregnancy.
Yeah, this is a bit I don't want to talk about.
Oh, no, not that. The bit where she gets on a bike and cycles through London in her third trimester on the back of a motorbike with someone. I was like, you can't physically get on a motorbike when you're third trimester. You can't hold someone. And then she walks for miles
and
miles.
This is what I mean about madness.
Yeah. But then everyone keeps telling her she's pregnant.
But, I mean, mad people hear all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Mm. I mean, going to meet Big Brother, all of these things felt like delusions.
Well, that would make sense of how I struggled with the believability at the end. The Big Brother meeting and all that. I thought
that was nothing made geographical sense. Nothing made story sense.
It was thematic, so easy to get there.
Thematically, yeah. She just appeared at places and had scenes with characters from her previous life.
That's why the ending is not as strong as the other bits. Well, I don't think that's a madness. I think Newman is trying to make a bigger point about the other regime.
But I couldn't quite work out... Do you think that's what it was? The point was they're just as bad.
Yeah, because that ending...
Rebelling.
The ending, is very much like that ending. I was like, oh, God. It was a bit like, see, we're all bad. And I was like, oh, Newman. Like,
but also that point,
I enjoyed it so much.
But that point is also made... I mean, that's what 1984 ends with.
Yeah. But 1984 ends with him loving Big Brother. And that's where you go, oh, he's... We know
he's listening to the radio... What he does still have is a hope that we've lost Africa, that there's going to be this war in the Congo.
Mm.
It's actually, I mean, he does has this inkling of rebellion still. It just won't be him.
Oh, do you think? I think the inkling is that he's completely broken and he loves Big Brother and he's lost that ability to...
He's fighting things. There's like he has these sort of odd smells and memories and he's sort of intentionally fighting it off.
Because I feel like he loves Big Brother at the end and that's how you know a man has been broken and always showing you can break a man. This is how you do it. And I felt like Julie at the end, I felt like they loved the character of Julia so much, they weren't willing to break her. You say, it's interesting you said it was modern, because I was like, obviously Orwell's writing about 1948 and, you know, post-war England. And then I found slightly that she wasn't writing about now, but she was trying to capture post-war England.
That's why I really liked it. And sorry, Sandra Newman is non-binary. And also, most readers wouldn't know that.
Yeah.
It's only because of the furore about the men that I know that, which was Sandra Newman's last book. Sandra Newman, I think, is still writing about the 1950s. The modernity is the sex and the bodily functions.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And it's, so it's writing for a modern reader, but it's not trying to pretend it happened. It wasn't trying to move it up and go, oh, Margaret Thatcher.
No, no, but I slightly felt, you know, there was moments.
Brexit's not in there.
There was moments with the newspeak or the way that people spoke post-war that I felt a bit like I didn't quite believe in the way that Orwell, obviously, you utterly believe that world. There was a bit like when she was sort of writing prose and stuff, I was like, oh, it feels a bit like somebody kind of aping that world rather than the Orwellian take on it, but very slightly. And again, my complaint is
also
very
I think that's might be an American thing.
Yeah, maybe
writing English people.
Yeah, there was occasional things where I was like, this doesn't sound like people.
I swear, I think it's an American English thing,
maybe,
or Airstrip One.
Airstrip One.
Come on, let's get it all right. How do you think you're doing, Airstrip One?
Yeah, I mean, this is my worst nightmare. I'm the person who takes the pills straight off the bat. Straight off the bat. Give me 20.
Give me 20.
Go down the river. Yeah. Watch the thrush is singing. See you later, guys. I cannot handle this. I can't handle the loneliness, the not the trust. I don't want to sleep in a bunk bed. Mm. I don't want to.
Yeah, in a bunk bed.
I don't have to wear overalls.
No.
I hate all of it, Daniel. It's really scary.
The bunk beds, most of all, are the biggest. And you'd have to.
You have to.
Mandatory bunk beds.
Yeah.
Mm. How would you fare in Airstrip One, Daniel Rigby?
I think I'd do pretty well.
Yeah, you're an amateur. You're an actor. You can fake it. You'll be like, I hate it. B.
Yeah, I'd have one of those big flats, be bringing people in.
Real wine.
Real wine.
Yeah.
You'd be O'Brien, is what you're saying.
I know. I mean, I think I'd like to think in my head, rebel guy. Very successful rebel guy. Mm. But actually, I think in reality, I would be like, here are the names. Can I please have some chocolate?
Yeah.
Please, can I have loads of chocolate?
Yeah. Four of them I'm related to. I'll give you their numbers.
It's just my dad, my mum, my brothers. Please, at least four squares of chocolate. But these.
A whole bar.
It's the whole Goldstein night is odd when you know Brett Goldstein. It does feel like everyone's just like, Goldstein?
Yeah.
All the time. But I actually thought, in terms of the movie of this, Brett Goldstein would make a really good big brother.
Ooh,
When he'd have to grow a moustache.
A young, handsome one.
Yeah. So when Julia's describing that sort of like perfect, you know, handsome masculinity, but with muscles.
Yeah.
Muscles.
I don't know,
authority.
Once you add a moustache to Brett Goldstein, what happens?
Well, he's already got quite a lot of...
Too much hair. Yeah, it's just eyes peeping out of a hairy face.
It might be too much. It might be too much with a moustache. Yeah, I don't know how I'd fare in Australia. Not well. Not well, I think. I think I'd be all right with the dormitory bunk beds hiking.
I'll tell you where you'd come up. Right?
Yeah.
Someone had something terrible happen to them and everyone's supposed to just avoid them, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And you'd be straight over like, okay?
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to do that.
You'd be straight away.
Like when they're just like, when she comes back,
I'll make
a like,
bed for you.
She's like, where's Mickey's bed? And they're like, who are you talking about?
Yeah.
I was like, that is hard to just be like, oh, I don't, well, that woman who was here 20 minutes ago.
Yeah, shut up.
There's something so authentic about how, I mean, it's in the original as well as this, but how people's thinking gets changed by just an outside influence insisting.
Huge, because that is what 1984 is trying to show you, the power of rewriting over your own memory, and that makes something true. Mm. And that is what this book does as well.
Yeah. Have you ever read The City in the City?
No.
Which is China Mieville.
Oh, no.
And it's a sort of sci-fi book, really, but it's like a noirish sci-fi world where it's two cities that are in the same geographical spot.
Ooh.
And it's illegal to acknowledge or see
the other
city.
Wow.
And it starts as a murder mystery where the investigator has to then cooperate with the invisible city. Invisible, but but it's so brilliantly written because it's just the murk of people have become convinced that they cannot see everything that is around them. It's a real...
But
it's got shades of this.
If it's dangerous to admit something, you would work so hard to disappear it.
Yeah.
In the way that people's memories don't work with traumatic events, where your brain goes, I can't go to the shop and ask about how much sausages are, while also acknowledging this, so goodbye.
Yeah.
I just read a Hilary Mantel... I'm reading her Mantel Pieces, which I think is the most Edinburgh Show title for an author.
Is that really what it's called?
It's called Mantel Pieces, and it's like her sort of journalism. And I was like, Hillary, 5 o'clock at the Pleasance. Second to the 21st.
That reminds me of, I really wanted to do a show called Fridge Magnet and have a picture with just me with my arms around some fridges. I never got to do it.
And that is Edinburgh's loss. Edinburgh's loss. That would have been amazing.
It was just that. It was just.
Did you have anything else?
That was
poster.
I had the poster.
Plenty of other people built shows on Les.
On posters.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah, it's called Mantel Pieces.
You would expect
you could
more.
Do a fridge advert then. Mm. An advert for fridges.
It's a magnet.
Yeah, she was writing about. It's a really old piece from like the 90s. About living in Saudi Arabia, which she did for a time, and about the power of words when they were living in kind of a sort of censorship. And she was writing about how the word pork is being censored. Mm. So like when people are bringing in books to Saudi Arabia, like so recipes and just like, just the mention of it, and she starts, you know, saying exactly what you're saying, of like, where do we get to when you don't even have a sense, like pork doesn't mean anything to you. So it does become like, it's not even like, oh, I don't eat it. It's like, I don't know what you're talking about, like how can you, that's so important to the people in Saudi at that time of that particular brand of Islam, that they felt so strongly that it was so awful to even hear it. Mm. And again, that's what, you know, why this book still hits, isn't it? Why 1984 still hits is we're not like, we're living in a time where everybody can say what they want and do what they want.
A few years ago, probably over 10, but it's when I first started comedy and I was working in it was a Christmas grotto, but they didn't want to have anything to do with Christmas because it's a multicultural area, and they didn't like the idea of some children not being able to say yes to the presents. So they had Cinderella, Fairy Godmother and Prince going around giving presents, but they also had Christmas music playing where they scrambled the word Christmas.
Oh, wow.
Oh, my goodness me.
Right, so it's obviously they'd had a meeting and they thought,
I wish, you know, it could be
every day. That was it? Yeah, so last, I gave you my heart.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's what they did. Like, it was a swear word on Radio 1.
Very dangerous to your mental health working there. Imagine, because I remember working in Pizza Hut and hearing Torn by Natalie Imbruglia about a million times a day, and that being enough. But if the word torn was scrambled,
yeah,
I can't imagine what it would do to the psyche. Do you think this stuff helps anyone?
No,
but that's a big question.
Are you from Big Brother? Have you come to make us question ourselves?
No,
talking
just
about
my
the book,
because I was thinking about. I don't know how it relates to, I mean, does, because there's lots of dystopian fiction, and quite often dystopian fiction reflects fears that we have presently about our society, about our politics. And I just, because 1984 was written in 48, 49.
Yeah. That's sort of what I meant, that she doesn't go for some slightly more modern point, that she is living in that bit, which is like when he wrote it was groundbreaking and life-changing and, you know.
But did his book help anyone?
Oh, that's a big essay question. So,
I guess it's just maybe not an answerable question.
It might not be help as in maybe. Like, oh, your life is better or you can better adjust. But in terms of like all human beings having this journey, which is sort of understanding humanity, including the really awful things that human beings do to each other. Mm. After the Second World War, the whole of psychology was, is evil innate? Why do people obey things they know are bad? How are individuals programmed to do things that as even children know are wrong? And so the literature, the art was asking those same things, wasn't it? And so George Orwell showed us in Winston how hard it is to have any self under a regime that doesn't value you, where you don't have, you know, food, safety, and how your own fear eventually can be manipulated. By showing all those things, I don't think he was making people go, oh, okay, that's all right then. That kind of help. This book for me was showing how a woman, the character of Julia, all she had was sex. That's her only resource, and she has to use it to, you know, number one, to feel alive because she enjoys it, but also to manipulate people for her own safety. And that to me felt exactly like a polar opposite of Winston, who doesn't have sex in that way. And that is the character of Julia that Orwell originally wrote. The whole point was she represented sensual humanity, and she was much more of a rebel than Winston was.
Yeah.
I watched Beyond Utopia documentary while I was reading this. Mm. And it's about North Korea and North Korean defectors. Okay. And you realise that we have an Oceania on Earth at the moment. But the fascinating thing about the documentary is it's a study of several different groups of defectors trying to leave the country and escape, which is incredibly dangerous, obviously.
Yeah.
There's one particular thread which follows a family, and there are three generations. It's an 80-year-old grandma, the parents, and the children. They have to escape through Laos and Vietnam, and they're helped by a priest in South Korea. But they are filming stuff on their phones. It's just... so terrifying and tense. But the stories that they tell from inside of North Korea are... I mean, on a par with this.
Yes, yeah.
But the 80-year-old grandma, as she's going through the jungle and talking and is being interviewed at one point by one of the producers, is still rationalising. She's fleeing for her life from this regime that she's lived in since she was born and is still calling Kim Jong-un a great man and is saying it's the mental gymnastics that she's doing as she's fleeing through the jungle to justify her own existence. It's so powerful as a study of psychology and what that kind of regime can do to a human being, that you're so oppressed, you're literally running with your family with the possibility of death, and you're still going, I think he's a great man. I think it's just we've taken a wrong turn. And it's the Americans' fault, the American bastards, because they don't have a word for Americans. It's
American Bastards.
It's American Bastards is literally the word.
Oh my God, that's incredible. Wow.
Oh, it's so incredible. But it's like, it reminds me of those early, you know, the scientists who didn't want to let go of God, even though they also had proof of evolution.
Yeah.
So, you know, both things are true at once. Like, I'm doing this. This is even more majestic what God's done.
Yeah.
And for that, like, if it can highlight and remind you that, we're not exactly living in a free society, and also be an interesting piece of literature and a gripping piece of literature, it is helping. I feel like I've been harsh now, because you're right. It is incredible achievement.
What you had was that
ending. Doing things is hard, Carrie.
It is hard.
You had that emotional reaction of something.
I just wanted to say to Sandra, whoa, what's happening now? Well, she's 9 months pregnant. She's getting on a motorbike, holding on to the man.
She thinks she's pregnant. But
that is a cop out. No way. Did you have a last line you wanted to land on, or have you already read your...
I wanted to just read the final third of the book out loud for everyone.
Oh my God.
I really liked the...
Newman!
I really liked Big Brother's real name. That's what I'll say.
Oh, yes.
That was so funny.
That was funny.
That's too much of a spoiler to say.
Let's leave that for readers to find. I
had that moment, having not read tonight, everyone, of like, is that from Orwell? Does he call him that? Like,
so undignified.
Yes, that was particularly brilliant.
The last line rang a bell for me, and I'm going to say the last line. I probably shouldn't say the last line.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's all right. Yeah.
She says, yes, I will, yes. And I looked it up, and it rang a bell because when I was at drama school, we staged Ulysses, not the whole thing.
Yeah.
We didn't stage the whole thing. But in an attempt to make the unreadable unwatchable.
Rada did Ulysses.
We did. Like,
it's an excellent school.
We did one chapter of Ulysses, so read Ulysses. And it's actually the last line of Ulysses. And the last chapter of Ulysses is called Penelope. And the narrators have been Leopold Bloom, Stephen Dedalus, and then the very last chapter is Molly Bloom, which I think is just a sort of literary nod from her.
Oh, that is
but
good.
But I also wondered about that last third then, if that's Ulysses.
Oh, yeah, maybe.
I think Sandra Newman. It's all right that it doesn't make much sense.
No, it's all right. I think that I swear Sandra Newman's a genius, and I think maybe this is something where we'll find out
that there's you're more, right. That,
no, there's
that
some
you're right.
No, there's
that
some Ulysses.
They're a genius and you agree with them. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, maybe.
Daniel, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
To talk
thank
to
you,
us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Weirdos Book Club. My novel Weirdo and Carrie Ad's book You Are Not Alone are both available now. And we have a live Weirdos Book Club recording at the Chortle Book Festival.
We do. It's at the British Library on Sunday the 3rd. 3rd of March. That's the British Library in London. It's a very beautiful venue and we've got a very beautiful guest. What a guy.
Tim Key.
Tim Key, talking about his brilliant new book of poetry, Chapters. If you would like to buy tickets to that, and of course you do, head to plosive.co.uk or ctickets.com.
I've also got a live event at the South Bank Centre coming up in May. Check out our Instagram at Sarah and Carriad's Weirdos Book Club for the upcoming books we're going to be discussing.
Thank you for reading with us.
We like reading with you.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to Amazon.com/comedy ad free. That's Amazon.com/comedy ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hi, I'm Lucy Beaumont.
And guess what? I'm Sam Campbell.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, you might enjoy our podcast. It's called Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.
We have a podcast and it might be, I probably don't want to sound, like I'm bragging, but it's dynamite. It is electric. It's high voltage. And please, we really need you to listen. You don't understand how much we need this.
Is it on all the platforms?
Oh, it absolutely is. But this one's out now. Lucy and Sam's Perfect Brains.